for their livelihood. Some strike out to the sea in small boats and throw their small nets in to catch fish. Others go out in wooden launches, which could be called the biggest of man-made contraptions. They go out to sea and spend months fishing. These large wooden motorboats are equipped with proper refrigerators and air conditioning for the crew. The fishermen here say they are not happy with their catches in recent years. They say marine life populations have shrunk drastically. The declining numbers of fish in seas and oceans has its cause in different and important reasons. The first reason behind the decrease in the numbers of marine life around the world is the boom in the human population on Earth. The growth in the human population has led to a larger demand for fish and in turn to overfishing by those in the fishing industry. Operations that are carried out via large ocean-going trawlers fitted with radars and other high-tech equipment. Ships that have nets running several kilometers and by means of radars can trap thousands of fish in every attempt in the depths of oceans. In almost every catch, these ships bring home fish weighing upwards of 300,000 kilos altogether. Industrial fishing and the overconsumption of marine life by humans leaves the fish no time to reproduce, pushing many species to the brink of extinction. In a recent survey, researchers at the University of British Columbia found that in half a century, human consumption has pushed down big fish populations by 90%, fish that are in high demand on the market. They have predicted that if serious action is not taken against overfishing by developed countries, all these species of fish will have gone extinct by 2050. Marine life populations are on the decline, which will have dire consequences for humans and the environment alike. The ecosystems of seas and oceans are intertwined with the lives of humans and the environment they live in. They're all very fragile. Iran accounts for only a small portion of the marine life caught around the world. The reasons being high prices, the small share the marine animals have of the Iranian diet, and the absence of advanced fishing vessels in the country. But European countries, the United States, Japan, and many other developed countries play an important role in the destruction of marine ecosystems. They have done more damage to the environment than any other country in the world. And this is a result of a boom in their populations, a change in consumption patterns, and the lifestyle of the people living in those countries. There are two other important reasons that have contributed to the dwindling numbers of marine animals: contamination and global warming. Berris is a very beautiful wharf. It was built at the foot of the Berris cliffs, offering a spectacular view. Launches and boats return here with their catch of the day to sell their prized sea creatures to the middleman. Beautiful the fellow is. The local fishermen here call it the kilkita in their local dialect. It's so colorful. Unfortunately, she too is still carrying her eggs. They get caught in the fisherman's net in this season. Most of those I've seen were ready to spawn. This is their time to reproduce, but they don't get the chance to do it. They are pulled out of the water along with the thousands of eggs that they are carrying in their abdomens. Poor thing is struggling to get out of my hand. Just look how beautiful it is. So colorful. One of the fishermen gave me this lobster and said I could have it, but I'm gonna let it go. because it's carrying so many eggs. After my visit to Barry's Wharf, I set off on a walking journey along the shores of the Sea of Oman. Of course, I'll be walking on the cliffs all along. The view from atop the cliffs in Barry's is simply matchless. Fortunately, there aren't constructions of any kind up here. The area is an asset for Balochistan and indeed for Iran because of its pristineness. I hope to see the same unspoiled beauties and pristineness the next time I visit this part of my country and its beautiful landscape. I hope more and more tourists come to visit Balochistan. Nature travelers go to places that are pristine and untouched in order to immerse themselves in the peace and quiet that those places offer. Beautiful rocky cliffs are where Barry's begins. Those are the shores of Barry's, among the most beautiful of our beloved country, Iran. But the bluff along the shore is crumbling into the sea. The waves lap at the walls made up of millennia-old sediments that settled on the bottom of the Sea of Oman that used to cover this whole area. The bluff is capped by a 2-meter-high layer of rock, like the one I'm sitting on right now. It feels like reinforced mortar with all the shells and algae in it, fossils that have been here for thousands, or should I say millions of years. But the layers underneath are weak and brittle, allowing the waves to chip away at them one bit at a time. The green blocks or rocks that you see on the coast are in fact the top layer of the cliff. They used to be up where I am right now. It's going to take the waves some time to turn them into sand and dissolve them in the water. It's about 60 meters down to the foot of the cliff, and a huge slice of the cliff has splintered from the rest, or should I say from Barry's territory.
Insights into the Holy Quran.
Indeed, this Quran guides to what is most upright and gives the good news to the faithful who do righteous deeds, that there is a great reward for them.
In the name of Allah, the Compassionate, the Merciful, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Assalamu Alaikum. Welcome to another edition of the program, Insights into the Holy Quran by Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi, a graduate of the Hawza Seminary of Qom. Please stay with us.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين ثم الصلاة والسلام على سيدنا محمد وآله الطاهرين In the name of Allah, the most beneficent, the most merciful. Dear listeners, hello everyone. Welcome to another edition of the program Insights into the Holy Quran. I am Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi, and in this edition, we will try to have a closer look at the 25th chapter, Surah Al-Furqan. First, Let's just listen to the verses we're going to talk about in this program, and we'll be back shortly. So stay with us.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم.
In the name of Allah, the entirely merciful, the especially merciful.
وقال الذين كفروا لولا نزل عليه القرآن جملة واحدة كذلك لنثبت به فؤادك ورتلناه ترتيلا.
And those who disbelieve say, why was the Quran not revealed to him all at once? Thus it is that we may strengthen thereby your heart, and we have spaced it distinctly.
As you may have been previously with us, dear listeners, we were discussing the 32nd verse of chapter Furqan. وَقَالَ الَّذِينَ كَفَرُوا لَوْلَا نُزِّلَ عَلَيْهِ الْقُرْآنُ جُمْلَةً وَاحِدَةً كَذَلِكَ لِنُثَبِّتَ بِهِ فُؤَادَكَ وَرَتَّلْنَاهُ تَرْتِيلًا. And those who disbelieve say, why has not the Qur'an been sent down upon him all at once? Thus it is revealed that we may strengthen your heart by it, and we have rehearsed it to you in slow, well-arranged stages, gradually. In the previous episode, we said that these pretext seekers are used to finding new pretexts every moment, and the thing which is addressed in this verse is that they question why the Holy Quran is not revealed all at once. Why has it been sent down to him on special occasions during 23 years? To which the Holy Quran says, كذلك. This means that we sent down the Quran gradually to make the heart of the Prophet stronger, to make the keeping of the Qur'an easier. Moreover, the Holy Prophet was illiterate, he did not know writing and reading, so to make him understand the revelation better, the Holy Qur'an was sent down gradually. In fact, the gradual revelation of the Holy Qur'an is the factor of continual and permanent relation of the Prophet ﷺ with the source of revelation. This gradual revelation makes him stable in this way. It shows that prophethood is not a temporal matter. Of course, a religion that is comprehensive and enlivened, it has a strong relation with events and occasions. And events and occasions can occur gradually, not instantly. During these 23 years, we had so many verses revealed down by the Almighty Allah because of different events. And one of the reasons they used to bring these pretexts is that it was really difficult for them to avoid prohibitions instantly. To obey all orders and to avoid these prohibitions instantly was really difficult for those common people. And this was one of the reasons that caused them distress and constriction. But they were blind to understand that each and every surah and verse of the Holy Quran is by itself a miracle. It's a gradual revelation that can be seen as a continual miracle. Each miracle soothed the heart of the Prophet ﷺ against the enemy's oppressions. And it is interesting that some of these verses are the answers of the people's questions. So a question must first be raised, and then its answer must be given. Some verses and judgments were descended for a certain period, so a verse must be sent down to annul them first.
We hope and pray that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala blesses us with the ability to cover more of His divine
word. In this series of programs, we will inshallah discuss the Holy Quran with a thematic approach.
We will inshallah discuss the chapter.
وتمثل القرآن في أخلاقه وفعاله فيه الفؤاد تعلقا وتلاه في جنح الدجى متدبرا.
The context in which Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala speaks in this verse is the context of mentioning the ills and problems and evils of the people of the book, the previous nations who have received revelation, and more particularly, the Jew.
Now let's listen to some of the verses of the Holy Quran.
First, let's listen to a few verses.
Now let's listen to some verses of the Holy Quran.
Insights into the Holy Quran by Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi, a graduate of the Hausa Seminary of Qom.
So, as you can see, there is much difference between revelation of each verse according to special position and instant revelation of all verses, regardless of situations. Anyway, at the end of the verse, it is said, وَرَتَّلْنَاهُ تَرْتِيلًا. We rehearsed it to you in slow, well-arranged stages, gradually. There is one tradition regarding slowly and distinctly reading and recitation of the Holy Quran. The Holy Prophet ﷺ has said, تَرْتِيل is to recite the Quran distinctly, not like reading a poem. When you reach its wits, you stop and you purify your heart and spirit. Your aim of recitation must not be reaching the end of surah. This is what Imam Ali alayhi salam says. He says the purpose of tartil is to stop when it needs full stop and articulation of letters. So when we say we are doing tartil, we say that we are reciting the Holy Quran beautifully and at the same time slowly. It is to stop and to resort to Allah, Imam Sadiq alayhi salam says. When we are reciting the verses that are about fire and punishment, we must stop, we must resort to Allah. When the verses about the paradise are read, it is time to pray and ask Allah the heaven. So, it is understood from all these narrations and the words of commentators that tartil is to recite the Holy Quran slowly and in proper order. Reading must be done verse by verse, and these verses must not be mixed. So the one who is listening to us must understand that this is the first verse and this is the second. He must understand, and they must write it down for the next generations, so the future ages can use the light of its guidance and make dark places of their life lighted by the different verses of the Holy Quran. Thank you, brothers and sisters, for staying with us in this program. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Don't be saddened by what you see, by all the lies and treachery. Life is cruel, but don't worry. In your heart lies the key to unwind all the secrets. This life we see.
Thank you, dear listeners of IRIB English, for listening to us. If you have any question regarding our programs, feel free to email us at englishradio@irib.ir. Also visit our website at parsetoday.com. Until the next program, take care and goodbye.
Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio. log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Be aware, the hearts find rest in Allah's remembrance.
Spring of truth. Khomeini presented the Islamic State in this fashion that the people became infatuated by it and offered thousands of martyrs and disabled individuals for the revolution and for Islam. If Allah forbid, there comes a time when the leaders of society and administrators of affairs behave differently, then know that the Islamic Republic has deviated from its main path. And it can no longer be regarded as being a state that takes steps towards Islam and was of consideration of His Holiness Hazrat Ali, peace be upon him, even though on the surface it claims to be one.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Welcome to the program Spring of Truth from IRB English Radio. I'm your host, Sayyid Mohsen Naqvi, with the viewpoints of Imam Khomeini in regards to the Islam and our deeds. In one of his speeches, he has mentioned that let us abandon this satanic cover in favor of a divine one, which means to act according to the Islamic system. In this part of his speech, he is talking about the Islamic system and the role of the people. Therefore, it is necessary for the people to act according to the Islamic rules. I remember in chapter 2 of the Quran, verse number 134, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala also mentions that تِلْكَ أُمَّةٌ قَدْ خَلَتْ لَهَا مَا كَسَبَتْ وَلَكُمْ مَا كَسَبْتُمْ تِلْكَ أُمَّةٌ قَدْ خَلَتْ لَهَا مَا كَسَبَتْ وَلَكُمْ مَا كَسَبْتُمْ وَلَا تُسْأَلُونَ عَمَّا كَانُوا يَعْمَلُونَ, which means that is a nation that has passed away. There is what they gained, and yours shall be what you have gained. You shall not be questioned as to that which they have gained. So the same thing is said by Imam Khomeini, that this satanic system which was before the Islamic Revolution and the things which were applied in this state and the people which they used to do, it has passed away. We have changed it with the Divine One, with the Islamic One, with the Islamic Revolution. Ya Rabbana, salli ala Taha al-Nabi wa alihi, sallallahu alayhi. So this Islamic revolution is something that will give you the power of acting according to the Islam, and it is your deeds that will have a positive effect on Islam, because in Islam it is the matter of justice, It is the matter of humanity. It is the matter of caring about each other. And that cannot be done unless we make our deeds good, unless we reform ourselves. Therefore, we need the reformation. We need to make our deeds according to the Islamic system. Therefore, that's why Imam Khomeini has said that it is to act according to the Islamic system and not to pretend to be someone who lives in the Islamic system, because there are people in today's world who claim to be Muslim, but with their actions, we see that they know nothing about Islam. Thanks for listening. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Kenya, and a big welcome to this week's edition of Africa Today.
Stay tuned with Africa Today.
Africa Today.
Early January, Ghanaians were pleasantly surprised to see the country's Speaker of Parliament, Alban Begbin, dressed in traditional clothing instead of a ceremonial outfit with colonial links. He addressed Parliament on the reason for adapting Ghana's traditional attire.
We must create a unique set of values and norms that will give a unique character to our parliament, to set it apart from the colonial legacies of the British system.
Hello, I'm Mubarak Henia, and a warm welcome to Africa Today, a weekly program that gives you an alternative view of events making headlines in Africa. Today, we are focusing on a very commendable decision by the Speaker of Ghana's Parliament to dump decades-old cloak of the Speaker for traditional Ghanaian attire. This move is seen as a step towards the revival of the country's rich culture. In the second part of our program, we shall talk about the decision by Twitter to disable accounts of African activists opposed to United States imperialism. We are asking, why are the US-based social media giants intent on muzzling the voices of freedom in Africa? Stay with us as our experts give us their insight.
Ghana, back to the roots. The Speaker of the Parliament in Ghana, Alban Babin, fulfilled his promise of limiting the wearing of Western suits and gowns during sitting in the House. The Speaker ditched his ceremonial outfit for traditional attire for sitting in the House on January 25, 2022. He wore a traditional outfit with kente cloth and a crown worn by chiefs during ceremonies. The kente fabric comes originally from Ghana centuries ago and is one of the best known of all African textiles. The kente cloth subsequently became a symbol of Pan-African identity and a symbol of black pride.
Now, prior to wearing kente during his official parliamentary duties, Begbin urged members of parliament to promote locally made traditional outfits and market Ghanaian culture instead of wearing Western attire.
You will not be seeing me often again with that dress code, a suit, and that aristocratic cloak or gown. You may be seeing me more with traditional dresses. I may use that only for ceremonial occasions, which is what is in the literature of Ghana concerning that cloak and gown. It's for only ceremonial occasions. So those who know former speakers, you see former speaker Asedu wearing a kente and a shirt. And that is what is the portrait we have today. And so we have to change all that. Well, we have to provide the market for our produce.
Now, for more on the move by Ghana's parliament speaker to adopt the country's traditional clothing, we contacted Jonathan Ofei Anso, Ghanaian journalist and commentator. He's also the publisher of Africa Briefing. Thanks a lot for your time, sir.
Thank you for having me.
Now, what's your initial reaction to the move by Ghana's parliament speaker to dump decades-old colonial cloak for the country's traditional clothing?
Well, I do applaud him, you know, for the step he's taken, because we are Ghanaians, and we have our traditions, we have our customs, we have our costumes. We've been independent for 65 years. So I see no reason why, you know, the parliamentary speaker should be donned in the colonial regalia with the wake. Look, even considering the weather, what I do, the parliament is fully air-conditioned. Still, it does not speak well, you know, of our culture. For our culture, you know, we have cultures, we have our own costumes. So I believe that the step he's taken, you know, should be applauded.
Ghanaians were clearly delighted by their parliament speaker for adopting the country's traditional attire. Many Ghanaians say the speaker showed the way in promoting the Ghana brand, and he urged the Chief Justice to emulate the speaker in ensuring that lawyers and judges are also permitted to dress in local fabrics in court. Can we say there is some sort of revival in the country and people are tired of colonial relics and want to return to their roots?
Yeah, I believe so. I mean, judging by the reaction, you know, from Ghanaians, you know, generally within the country, I think, look, it shows how proud Ghanaians are of their heritage. Though I must say that we've been influenced a lot by Western cultural influences. But look, these days, when I was growing up, you know, in my teens, whatever, we all used to listen to soul music, reggae, you know, so on and so forth. But these days, when I go to Ghana, everywhere you go, especially the youth, you know, they all listen to Ghanaian music. Everywhere you go, it's Ghanaian music, Ghanaian music. So that should tell you that Ghanaians, you know, are at least the current youth, you know, the youth of today, the Ghanaian youth of today, appreciate more, you know, their culture than any Western influences.
The Ghanaian government has introduced the use of locally made Ankara fabrics as school uniforms in order to promote African prints.
The Speaker of Ghana's Parliament says his decision to adopt the Kente traditional attire goes in line with the aspirations of the first President of Ghana, Kwame Nkrumah.
That this decision accords with some of the propositions of the first President of Ghana, Dr. Kwame Nkrumah, and the other founding members of the Parliament of the First Republic. The dominant dress code of members of the National Assembly of Independent Ghana was native costume.
Now, what impact will the move to adapt African fabrics have on the youth in Ghana?
It's going to have a very, very positive impact. I recall about 20 or so years ago, the government did not rule, but set this trend on that every Friday, public servants should not go to work in Western attire. So these days, you go to Ghana, you go to the ministries, offices, whatever, you see men and women wearing traditional garments. The men usually wear shirts made from Ghanaian cotton prints.
The government of Ghana is also involved in efforts to promote local products and boost employment. The Made in Ghana initiative was developed by the Ministry of Trade and Industry to promote products made in this West African country. In his introductory remarks after deciding to wear the traditional attire, this is what Ghana's president said on the need to promote products made in the country.
This is the Parliament of Ghana. It's a unique Made in Ghana product. And we must showcase and market it to the world as a brand.
Can the move to traditional attire be replicated in other sectors to attain self-sufficiency and disentangle the country from dependency and neo-colonialism?
It's a mindset that not only Ghanaians, Africans in general, have this mindset that anything coming from abroad is better than what, you know, is being produced locally. Like, you take a vehicle, you take a computer, you take a mobile phone, I mean, name it. Even close, I mean, they think, Africans think that whatever is manufactured abroad in Europe, America, China, Asia is much better than what is produced locally. So it's a trend that a mindset, but it will take a long time for this mindset to change. So what the government is doing now is a step in the right direction, but it's they are taking the baby steps. Okay, I mean, the school children wearing uniforms made from our own local fabrics, and so on and so forth, and so on and so forth. So by the time they grow to be adults, that culture will be ingrained, will be inculcated in them to move forward. So I believe that, look, it's a mindset. A mindset, it takes a long to change one's mindset. But I believe that Ghana and Africa will get there.
In Africa, dress provides a powerful tool to challenge neocolonialism and is also considered an effective method of cultural expression and resistance. Now, additionally, a person's dress code can reveal dimensions of political and social transformations that cannot be discerned through verbal and written articulations. There is a movement now to drop colonial attire in African parliaments and judicial organs. Now, most countries in Africa still use clothing linked to cultural colonialism. Isn't it about time that African countries take serious measures to revive their cultural identity?
Well, you take Moscow, look, go to Nigeria and go to the Sahelian countries, you know, Niger, Burkina Faso, Mali, Guinea, Senegal, Gambia. Most of them wear the bubu, you know, the African bubu, you know. And you take the armed services, like they say, the police, the army, they wear uniforms, okay? I mean, it is convenient. I mean, a policeman cannot wear the traditional African garment. In Ghana, our very traditional, the men wear a cloth wrapped over the shoulder. A policeman cannot use that garment, neither can a soldier. So that the uniform used by the security services, the army, the police, and so on and so forth, I think it's okay. But look, it will take a long time. We need to start from somewhere. Recently, the African Union officially adopted Swahili, the Swahili language, as an official working language for the EU. That is one step. So look, if you learn, you know your language, the more you know your language, the more you know your culture. So it will take some time. But I believe that eventually Africa will get there.
Thank you very much, Ofei Ansah, for your time and insight. Indeed, Africa is on the right path towards cultural revival. Now, we now take a short break, and our next subject will be on the crackdown launched by Twitter against African activists opposed to imperialism and neocolonialism. So stay with us.
Twitter crackdown on African activists.
You're listening to Africa Today. Africa Today is an analytical weekly review of political, economic, and social events in Africa, the world's second largest continent. The series is broadcast every week on Saturdays and Sundays by IRIB English Radio.
United States social media giant Twitter has disabled the accounts of several Ethiopians and Eritreans and their related groups without justification. Now, the accounts had recently helped promote the no more and hands off hashtags in the campaign against illegal intervention by the U.S. in the internal affairs of the two countries and other parts of Africa.
Amongst the disabled accounts was Horn of Africa Hub, a page started in October 2021 with over 18.8 thousand followers. This page described itself as combating false, deadly narratives about the Horn of Africa, including in Ethiopia, Somalia, Eritrea, Djibouti, and beyond.
Now, apart from the activities on Twitter, activists have also organized peaceful protests across the world to popularize the no more and hands off hashtags. There is one such protest in South Africa.
These things happened the past 3 years, you know. We've been trying to solve out the things in back home, but still he's trying. Our Prime Minister, Dr. Abiy, he's trying himself. But the thing is, the other opponent party, the TPLF, they don't want the leadership that he's running. And then they get support from U.S., actually. They get truly support from U.S. because the overseas news, the parties which is passing through CNN, BBC, the fake news that they produce for us.
Now, for more on the Twitter crackdown on online movements opposed to U.S. imperialism and neocolonialism, we contacted Hermela Ergawi, an Ethiopian-American journalist. Thanks a lot for your time today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Now, we have seen lies on mainstream media and crackdowns on the social media. What's your take on the crackdown by the social media giants against online activists?
Well, first, I think it's important to note that I was for a long time a part of the mainstream media. I worked for the CBS affiliate in LA, Al Jazeera America, which is pretty mainstream when it was launched here, as well as other local affiliates. So I'm very familiar with what the standards of mainstream media are supposed to be. And so I was really disappointed to find out that a lot of the reporting in the usual mainstream outlets like CNN, New York Times, was over time became very clear that it was not objective, that it was telling only this one-sided story, very much became propaganda. And so that's what inspired me to sort of move into this space and be a part of the conversation. And social media is the only way to really push back when you are reaching out to CNN and reaching out to outlets and saying, hey, this part of the story you guys are not covering over the course of months, then the only outlet you really have is social media. So we started the hashtag No More campaign to push back against a lot of the false narratives that were taking hold in the mainstream outlets.
Hashtag No More Movement started in Ethiopia and the Horn of Africa and then quickly spread out to other regions in Africa and beyond around the world and became a symbol of resistance against imperialism. In as far as Norway, Ethiopians and other diaspora Africans gathered to express their opposition to the US meddling in Africa.
TPLF is a terrorist organization. TPLF is a Trojan horse of United States. USA, learn from your mistakes. No to US invasion. No to US invasion in Ethiopia. No to US invasion in Eritrea. We stand for peace.
We stand for peace
in Ethiopia.
In Ethiopia.
We stand for peace.
We stand for peace
with Eritrea. Hands off Ethiopia.
Ms. Aregawi, can you elaborate more on what the no more and hands off hashtags are all about?
So hashtag no more was created in response to what was essentially government propaganda, U.S. government propaganda that was being told through mainstream media outlets about the conflict in Ethiopia. The mainstream narrative was that the Ethiopian government was trying to genocide the people of Tigray. Tigray is a region with ethnic Tigrayans, or largely ethnic Tigrayans, which make up maybe about 5% of the population. Both of my parents are from there, so I guess you would say I'm ethnically Tigrayan. So there is no part of me that wants to support a genocide against people of my ethnicity, and there isn't evidence to back that.
Twitter has taken down thousands of accounts in vast sweeps that sometimes claim to be targeting state-directed disinformation operations, but actually the objective is to clamp down on anti-US messages. Why are Western powers, especially the US, muzzling free African voices, especially Ethiopians, in social media platforms who are opposed to the TPLF rebels?
I really think the foreign policy right now is so extremely misguided. I don't think that this helps the U.S. at all. Honestly, the communities in the diaspora are trying to understand, why is the U.S. betting on this group that they cannot rely on? This group cannot even be relied on by their own people in the Tigray region, who are essentially at this point held hostage, right? So it's really confusing, because it doesn't seem productive, but the U.S. has taken the stance anyway.
The anti-war no more was a trending hashtag for weeks until Twitter blocked it. Now, despite the censorship by Twitter, this African campaign continues on social media platforms. Activists say that apart from Ethiopia, this campaign is also targeting U.S. interference in other African countries.
Ethiopians can govern their own affair. The United States should not be interfering in this, and that is why we are here. We say we are here to say no more Afghanistan, no more Syria in Ethiopia. Ethiopia can decide its own fate, and the interference that we see from Western countries is totally uncalled for, it's not necessary, and it should stop.
Over 100 million people are supporting the current government, and here in diaspora have a high support of what's going on in Ethiopia. So we're trying to tell the Biden administration, don't interfere. Ethiopia is a sovereign nation. We can make decisions and should not be supporting the terrorist group who wants to come back to power again by force.
Now, Ms. Aregawi, do you think the U.S. and other Western powers will succeed in silencing the voices of Africans who say no more to imperialism and neocolonialism?
I do not think they will be successful in silencing the people that are rallying around no more. This is something that's been decades in the making. The frustration that people have didn't just pop up last year. This is something really deep that the people know really well. And so it's a matter of how the U.S. will respond. So will they evolve? Will foreign policy here in the U.S. evolve in how it's been dealing with the Horn of Africa and other parts of Africa? Or is it just going to stay down this road, destroy the relationships with those countries, and essentially push them in a different direction in terms of geopolitics and who they choose to ally with? And you do see that. There's some support from Russia and China in the Horn of Africa. And part of that is the U.S. has just essentially pushed the people of that country in that direction, because they continue to tell the propaganda of the armed terrorist group that has waged a war on the people of Ethiopia. So all these different groups can't be silent.
Twitter is now facing accusations of pursuing a destabilization policy in Africa. The Nigerian says the U.S. technology company is employing double standards and supporting the secessionists in the West African country.
U.S. social media giants have come under fire over misuse of their platforms to spread hate and incitement in conflict areas in Africa and elsewhere. Now, what's your take on that?
You know, like everything else, if you don't evolve, you die. So there are more than 1.3 billion people in Africa. Many of them are young. Over the course of the next decade or two, many of them are going to be using social media platforms. So if Twitter and Facebook does not become more culturally competent and hire people from the diaspora in different regions to get a a better understanding of what is going on in those countries, then they will either intentionally or unintentionally be backing groups that are essentially behind violent elements in different countries. So in the beginning, I thought it was a context issue, even with the mainstream media. And then over time, when they had data that was countering what they were alleging and chose to ignore it, then it became clear that this was intentional.
Thank you very much, Ms. Haramela Aregawi, for your incisive analysis. Unfortunately, our time is up for today.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Now, we shall keep our eyes on the anti-imperialist movement in Africa here at Africa Today. Well, that's it for this week's edition of Africa Today. It's been great having you. Send us your comments through our social media handle and let us know your opinion. It was great having you, and goodbye for now.
IRIB English Radio presents Viewpoints.
The presence of different scholars.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Assalamu alaikum to you, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. This is Viewpoints. I'm Atta, the host of this program. With me in the studio are two guest speakers from the Islamic House of Qom, Sayyid Murtaza and Sayyid Muhsin. Sayyid Muhsin, assalamu alaikum. Welcome to the show.
Alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah. Thanks for inviting.
And Sayyid Murtaza, assalamu alaikum, brother.
Good morning. Thank you very much.
So, today when you look at the media all around the world, a type of harsh, violent, barbaric picture is made out of the religion of Islam, especially with the creation of such groups like ISIS, Al-Qaeda, and the suicide bombing, you know, here and there. Especially the people in the West has a wrong view regarding the religion of Islam and the true teachings of Islam. Today we want to talk about this topic, how the religion of Islam can help international bodies to establish peace all around the world. Sayyid Murtaza, let's start with you, brother. Islam is really a peaceful religion, isn't it?
Well, thank you very much. If you look at the word Islam itself, it has its deep root in peace and comfort. So these days we know that peacekeeping is a very essential and important part of everybody's life. I mean, the whole humanity needs to take refuge to peacekeeping. Otherwise, the same skirmish that we can see around the world is happening.
That's right.
And unfortunately, conflict and fights have taken over, you know, to many parts of the world, even very small communities around the world. So, unfortunately, some biased medias, are trying to instill this wrong idea that religious conflict is the root of all these problems around the world. And we know that it has become a very important issue these days. Okay. So the religion of Islam is very much interested and even is trying to disseminate this true ideology that peace and religion are together. So any religion who's trying to propagate conflict, discomfort and problems is not actually a true religion. So
that's right.
Islam is telling us that peacekeeping or keeping peace among all humanity is very essential and is necessary.
Okay, and there have been so many conversions to the religion of Islam because of the peace that it brings into the society and also at the individual mental level. You know, the people who has converted, when you ask them, one of the reasons is this tranquility, calmness, and peace of mind that it brings to you. This is one individual aspect, but when you look at the societal, social, collective aspect, you can find also this kind of peace. Sayyid Muhsin, what's your comment on that, brother?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Well, first of all, we should know that that the religion has a strong influence on the people.
Yes.
in belief and in their faith. So, and we know that the people, they cannot live without having a belief or faith. Even the atheists do have a belief on which they obviously rely. Therefore, we see different religions in the world, and we see people divided into different religions. But the Islam, as brother has said, in its name, it has the word peace itself.
Yes.
And according to one meaning, we refer to the religion of peace. Therefore, Islam has a big contribution in order to make a peace. And obviously, it depends whether we follow the Islam in its true way or not. Because everything has two kinds of use. It can be used properly or it can be misused. So when we talk about the religion of Islam and its contribution towards the peace in the world, we can see that the Islam is the complete version of all the religions.
Okay.
And it has everything within it. And because it's the final religion, we can say, like, from Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala.
Yes.
Therefore, it also refers to the peace as well. And on top of that, we, you know, the slogans even in the Quran and that are given by Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, these are not general or general slogans. For example, when he talks about his prophet, he wants to introduce his prophet, he says he's Rahmatul Lil Alameen.
Yes.
He's the mercy for all the worlds. So the one who is mercy for all the worlds means that he is the bringer of peace to all the worlds, basically.
Right.
So when we talk about the worlds, obviously it's different
yes.
states.
Okay.
So we can say, like, Islam has a big contribution if we really follow the true Islam.
That's right.
Because nowadays the problem is that the enemies are propagating against Islam
yes.
and people do not know the real source
yes.
of the Islam.
That's right. But say, Murtaza, there are still some doubts and questions regarding the misunderstanding out of the religion of Islam, because the extremist groups who are really the pioneers of showing a kind of violent, barbaric picture of Islam to the world refer to the same text of the Holy Quran that calls Prophet Muhammad as Rahmatul Lil Alameen. But they understood it in this way to kill here and there, to commit suicide, you know, and such, you know, violent actions that are every day shown on the Western media, on the news, you know, here and there. You can find, you know, so many clips, video clips, the audios here and there. And that's why even some of the scholars of religions in the world at the universities believe that these violent things are based on the very text of the Quran and the context in which Islam was created. What's your answer to that?
Well, actually, let's look at the wrong misinterpretation of some verses of the Holy Quran. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, some people that you call them scholars, they have their own interpretations, which has no actually base and roots in Islamic principles and ideologies. And unfortunately, we have this idea that the religious leaders who have a very crucial role in bringing peace into communities, highly important to know, and it's really good to know that we all have a very important task to establish peace mm-hmm. among all communities. This part has been forgotten by these people that they are just by name scholars.
Okay.
And unfortunately, they are not very much involved in interpreting the true aspects of some verses of the Holy Quran.
Okay.
So these pictures that have been broadcasted around the world are just coming from those interpretations that are not true. So if, on the other hand, we have another downside of this issue that many scholars do not get themselves involved in providing the true interpretation of those verses and give them the information and give such information.